Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast featuring a gaggle of politically astute friends from across the land, discussing the news of the day from our various geographic and political perspectives, and hopefully we'll have a few chuckles thrown in along the way. Or that whole thing, what we like to call it, is real debate without the hate. Hi, I'm Kevin Kelton. I'm a TV writer in Los Angeles and founder of Open Fire, one of the premier political debate groups on Facebook, if I do say so myself.
Hi there, I'm DJ McGuire, an economics instructor and a political writer on MorePerfectUnionPodcast.com, and right now I feel like I'm in hell. I'll explain later.
Okay, and we'll let you elaborate more on that later.
Wow, well, I'm not in that moral conundrum that DJ is, but I'm Greg Matuszak, a teacher and veteran of many political campaigns from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Rebecca Kushmiter, a social policy advocate, a blogger, and stay-at-home mom from Kensington, Maryland, which is adjacent to hell. At least that's what I'm gathering from the political commercials I'm seeing on TV.
And we'll get to the political commercials of the week, too. But first, let us remind everybody that you can also find Rebecca's writing at her website, stayathomepundit.com, where she muses on politics, motherhood, and other topics that tickle her fancy. And if you go to moreperfectunion.com, you'll find a commentary written by DJ and other contributors. And you can also find our podcast there, as well as finding us on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and on Facebook. And at your local library, I'm sure we're there too. So this week, we have a full plate, a full buffet of things that we have to talk about. But unfortunately, as has happened so many times recently, the first thing we have to talk about is a very sad story. It's the Texas church shooting, which just broke a few hours ago. We tape on Sunday evenings. And so we're just learning about this as you are. You probably know more about it by now as it's the next day for you. But we're learning that as many as 25 or 26 people have been lost, including at least one 14-year-old girl. There have also been other young victims. We don't know whether whether they're fatalities or not. But we do know that as young as 5 years old, and I believe I've seen on television as old as 72. So another horrific shooting. Guys, what can we say? I mean, what haven't we said about this topic in the past that we could say now?
Well, we know now that the shooter's dead. It's not clear at what point he died, at least from the coverage I've read. And he was just a guy with a gun, because we let guys and women and pretty much everybody in America have guns. And when that happens, people shoot people.
And to echo Rebecca's thoughts, you know, now is the time to do something about this. And last week, someone with a car ran over someone in a lot of people in New York, and it was horrible. So immediately, lawmakers tried to do something. They said, let's close these immigration laws. And it's something I disagree with, but they took action. But now we're going to see something, because it was a white man with a gun. They're going to say, oh, we can't talk about this now. Now's not the time. This is ghoulish. We can't talk about guns now.
Thoughts and prayers.
Almost immediately after the New York traffic attack happened.
It was a terrorist attack.
President Trump came out lashing against Chuck Schumer, saying that somehow some legislation that he was involved with was the cause of this terrorist attack. And Schumer said, all of a sudden, it's not too quick to talk about
policy change
solutions
when
you want to come at me or the subject isn't guns. So what's going to happen tomorrow when people start talking about gun rights and gun safety, and Trump and the other GOPers again say, too soon, why are we talking about this now when we should be thinking about the dead?
You know, they're already saying that on Twitter. I just saw some lady saying, well, all we can do right now is pray for the victims and their families. If you can't join me, be quiet. I'm like, no, actually, I'm not going to join you or be quiet. Thanks.
The shooting thing and the whole issue of gun rights, gun safety, if there's something that can be done in our penal system to stop things like this from happening in the future, that ultimately can only be decided at the ballot box. And on Tuesday, at least three states, and probably a lot more, have elections coming up that could have some significance in this area. So, DJ, you're our election analyst of the week. Why don't you tell us what you think the big ones are and the less interesting ones and where you see some daylight for the Democrats?
I have to say, Kevin, first of all, thank you for putting such a euphemistic spin on what even I acknowledge is an unhealthy obsession with elections all around the world. Thank you for that, Kevin.
Freudian much?
Maybe a little, which only proves my point. The three elections in this country that will probably get the most attention are the elections for mayor of New York City, and it looks like Bill de Blasio will win re-election. Governor of New Jersey, which looks almost certain to fall for the Democrats, and governor of Virginia, where I happen to live, and this is why I said that I am in hell. This has been perhaps, we say this every year, but this was easily one of the most mud-filled campaigns in Virginia history. Both candidates essentially wanted everyone to know, both major party candidates, wanted everyone to know that the other guy was just a real horror story. But the thing that hurts me the most is, for those of you who've listened to this podcast, you know how addicted I am to tax reduction, and you know how much I love tax reduction, and you know how hard it is to get me to oppose a tax reduction. And we'll talk about who actually succeeded in making me oppose a tax reduction later. But we have both major party candidates, the Republican Ed Gillespie, who has proposed an income tax cut, albeit filled with enough restrictions and caveats to make sure it never happens, which I discussed in my More Perfect Union podcast post, Ed Gillespie's Fake Tax Cut. And Ralph Northam, the Democratic nominee for whom I will vote on Tuesday, who has proposed a grocery tax cut for less well-off Virginians. And yet both of them have chosen to take their tax cut plans and hide them under bushes for some reason. Ed Gillespie actually put out an ad I saw yesterday talking about his economic plan without actually discussing what it was, namely a tax reduction. Ralph Northam has never talked about his grocery tax reduction since he mentioned it in the middle of the primary campaign. So I am now looking at two major party candidates who have tax reductions in their platforms and refuse to mention them. I'm in hell, people. This is absolute hell.
You know what? I live in a Virginia TV market. I'm right north of Washington, D.C., so I'm very close to the Virginia state line, and I get a lot of Virginia ads. I didn't know either of those candidates had a tax reduction plan until DJ told me. So the ads I'm seeing, I've heard that Ed Gillespie used to work for Enron, and Ralph Northam is a pediatrician. That's the only thing I can tell you about those two guys. There is not a whole lot of substance being flung around the Virginia race.
The other thing, both candidates have treated campaign substance like a controlled or foreign substance. They want nothing to do with it.
Okay, so you know what else is coming up this week?
Tell us.
You know what else? It's going to be some more Mueller time
Mueller
time!
I love when there are leaks out of the Mueller office, which really doesn't happen that often. But apparently they purposely leaked some information today that they are ready, or they have enough to indict Michael Flynn and Michael Flynn Jr. Now, I'm wondering, why do you think that they leaked this information? They're clearly not ready to formally indict them, or to at least announce that they've been indicted. So why are they leaking that they have enough to indict them? What's behind the scenes
Oh,
there?
Come on. Are you really that naive?
I think it's like a mob thing. They want to let you know that your family is not safe, that they will arrest Mike Jr., they will arrest Don Jr., they will arrest Jared.
But why don't they just do it? Why do they have enough?
They're casting a wide net.
Because they're trying to flip him. This is about trying to flip either of them by putting out the notion that, hey, you're going to be in the dock. You're not going to get off scot-free. Why don't you talk to us? And give us what we need to know.
Flip publicly, DJ. They don't need to do that. They say that to his attorney. They would just say to his attorney, "We're ready to indict him unless we can cut a deal." They don't have to go public for that.
I'm not saying they have to. They have to go public, but it certainly helps if you go public. That's what I'm saying. This is you don't have to apply pressure only privately. You can pressure publicly.
But Flynn has been trying to make a deal for months.
Right.
Flynn's been trying to make a deal for months.
Well, maybe it is quite possible that the FBI that Mueller does not like the deal that Flynn is offering, and he's basically using this as leverage to say, no, you get the deal we offer you, not the deal that you think you can offer us. I mean, that's certainly possible.
And it's also possible that Flynn and Flynn Jr. are flight risks, and you know, this is some warning to stay in the country or, you know, face something even more serious. Yeah.
It could also be a message to other witnesses. It could be a message to other potential folks in the Trump administration or formerly with the Trump campaign to say, you know, just a reminder, we're going to get these guys, so we will probably get you too. So maybe just more about Flynn, father and son, and maybe a bit more about anybody else who has not yet been indicted that say, hey, you might want to come talk to us, you know, because it's in your best interest.
Well, and I wonder who else they might be trying to flip. You know, somebody who has a FARA violation or some sort of
Jeff Sessions.
You know, Yeah. Oh my God.
That's
failure
the golden
to disclose
goose.
Something on a security clearance form.
Jeff Sessions is awesome.
Probably Carter Page too.
Carter Page. Let me ask you guys a quick question. So I've been speaking to, you know, a lot of conservatives, a lot of deep rooted conservatives, and not just my family. And even with these indictments. Thank you. Even with these indictments, I said, okay, so now it's solidifying. Now it's like for realsies, people. This looks like it's happening. Something's going down. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this Russian thing, this Mueller investigation, it looks like there were actual ties from the campaign. Okay. His campaign manager had ties. Well, that had nothing to do with Trump. Right. But his campaign did. Well, not really. Who were these guys? And so there was
the way they're spinning that.
Right.
So what's your question?
So the question is, have you guys met a lot or talked to a lot of conservatives who still see this as like, oh, this is ridiculous. This is, you know, this is just nothing. I mean, or is it just me?
And no, it's, of course, there's all the conservatives. Well, all of the people that originally supported Trump are discounting this, just like they're overplaying the Donna Brazile thing and just like they overplayed Uranium One before.
Oh,
God, this.
Have you met anyone who just said, oh, I guess he really is doing it then? Or
Eric Holder must think with enemies like these, who needs friends? I mean, Jesus F. Christ. Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ, as they say on Outlander.
When they are perp walking the Trump family out of the White House, there will still be 28% of the country that's going, why don't they leave that poor schnook alone? There are people who are never going to get it. First of all, their minds are too small to grasp the complexities of the case. Now, I know a lot of people out there probably hate me for saying that. You're in that group too.
So, wow.
That's so I don't care. You can
Kevin,
write to me
for
all
audience
day
cultivation.
I was gonna say, throwing some shade there.
I got to tell you, if you don't grasp what happened in this case, if you don't understand what the conspiracy is by this point, then frankly, you know what? Go watch The Big Bang Theory, because this is never going to play for you. But the rest of the country gets it. The rest of the country understands the connection. And Robert Mueller is going to lay it out in a beautifully orchestrated prosecution. Folks, if you're on my side of this and you're a little nervous, don't be nervous. Pour yourself a drink. Enjoy your Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. Watch some good football on TV. When Mueller lays out his case, it's going to be there, and it's going to be devastating.
Hold on, I'm going to take you in a time machine.
Now,
wait,
Kevin,
wait,
I have
hold
to
on.
Correct
gotta,
you.
Gotta,
the
gotta
folks
take,
who are too small-minded.
I
got to
take Kevin back a year ago, because this is where Kevin said, relax, relax.
God darn it, I was hoping nobody would catch
relax.
Me on that.
Pour yourself
Go ahead.
A drink.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Hillary's going to win. Relax.
Yep.
This is going to be a no-brainer. You know, for those people who are voting for
damn
Trump,
you, Greg Matusek.
This is so
damn
easy.
You.
So I just got to call a little shenanigans there. But no, I feel you. I'm totally with you.
It was coming out of my mouth, I knew somebody was going to get me on that.
Well, and my objection here, Kevin, is you can't expect people who really don't believe in the conspiracy to watch The Big Bang Theory. That show's about science. They're going to watch Fox News, where they, you know, are being told that the Earth is flat and guns don't kill people.
Okay, so what else do we want to talk about this week? Hey, Rand Paul was in the news. He was involved in a little controversy.
Yeah, but the gentleman from Kentucky was punched by another gentleman from Kentucky, specifically his next-door neighbor. Rand Paul was just out, like, mowing his lawn, and his neighbor punched him. And we don't know why. His neighbor's supposedly fairly liberal. And he's been living next to Rand Paul for a while, so I don't know what finally set him off. Like, you know, he's had numerous opportunities to punch Rand Paul in the past, but this weekend
I believe
finally
Rand Paul
sees the day.
I believe Rand Paul was calling out to him saying things like, "Hey, I'm not going to vote for, you know, workers' compensation for children because we're all," and I bet he just yells random stuff, like, just to mess with him, and says things like, "You know what? I'm going to tax shoelaces for people who are left-handed," and just does this just to mess with the guy.
Or it was some, like, libertarian argument about the side fence, you know?
Oh,
like,
that would be even better.
I mean, what would a libertarian's point of view be?
Or maybe
be
he wanted
on, like,
to put up,
know,
a shrine to Aqua Buddha in the front yard. Like, he was going to put up a fountain with Aqua Buddha. Remember the Aqua Buddha thing? Like, his frat in college?
Yeah, he made a young lady pray to it.
Credit where credit's due, though. In one of the articles I read about Rand Paul getting punched in the face, which I'm just going to say a lot. It mentioned that Rand Paul does free clinics for low-income people in his area to receive vision care. So he gives away his services for free. And I will give him credit for that. That's an important service. A lot of people don't have adequate vision insurance. And kudos to you, Rand Paul, for when you're not getting punched in the face, giving away eye care to people who need it. And now let's get back to talking about him being punched in the face.
The reality is, I fear that the only real lasting impact of this will be the new Allstate Mayhem commercial. "Hi, I'm your neighbor. And when I come slugging you for your political opinions, that lawnmower you're riding may ride straight into your house. So get Allstate and protect your home from mayhem like me."
All right, but let me finish this one thing. No senator deserves to be punched in the face, except maybe Ted Cruz. And in all honesty, it's not really that funny, because Rand Paul, I honestly think, really does try to do the nice thing. But in this political climate, I think tempers are high. And I do feel bad for him that he did get punched. But I don't think we know the full story.
Wait, didn't someone from the Rand Paul campaign once stomp on somebody's head?
No, I don't think so.
And speaking of senators that I'd like to punch, I added a new one this week. How's this for transition?
Now there's a segue.
Elizabeth Warren finally got on
DJ didn't even get to hear that.
Elizabeth Warren is now on my shit list. And I was like a big Elizabeth Warren fan. Like, and now I'm really mad at her for saying one word. Yes. And Greg, do you want to explain to the viewers why the word yes has set me off to the point that I'm ready to take her on in a battle of fisticuffs?
Yeah, and first of all, I will say this. Elizabeth Warren, when we used to ask you which senator would you like to be your girlfriend, you used to say Elizabeth Warren. So this is kind of a big thing.
Which which makes it all the more confusing that he is upset that she said yes.
I know. Elizabeth Warren was recently asked.
See, Kirsten Gillibrand is all about consent. Yes would go far in her book.
Oh, Elizabeth Warren was recently asked if she thought the election in 2016 was rigged by the DNC. And she said yes. And then she...
Not even knowing what she was talking about.
And once again, dividing the and I'm going to use this word, I hate to use this word, I'm using air quotes, the progressive part of the Democrats, because to be quite honest, I believe all Democrats are progressive.
Not me.
Progressive capital. Oh, yes, you are. You don't
well,
even
then
know
I'm a
it.
Progressive,
we're feeding
then I'm a,
you stuff in our...
Then I'm a
You're
progressive
a social liberal, DJ. I'm pretty sure you dance at pride parades.
Yes, you would. but it goes so, on. Yeah, I mean it's just kind of ridiculous.
Well, so what was Warren doing? What is her scheme here? What is her strategy? Is this a setup for 2020?
Of course it is.
I don't know.
Is that even a question?
You think so?
Yeah, she's going to hire Donna Brazile to run her campaign in 2020.
Right. Well, we'll get to Donna in a minute.
This is rats deserving.
Well, Donna started it.
Yeah.
This is Hillary Clinton lost for a whole host of reasons we won't get into now. And so now at this point, every Democrat has decided, or the most of the Democratic establishment, whatever the hell that means, has apparently decided that if they want to have a future, they have to find some way to throw Hillary Clinton under the bus. And this is what Donna Brazile has come up with. And this is apparently what Elizabeth Warren has come up with. And if this is merely relegated to complaining about the Democratic National Committee's behavior in 2016, you know, frankly, I'm okay with it, because it basically says that the far left of the party still doesn't know what the hell politics are really like. If you really think, and, you know, I'm going to join Kevin now in beating up on our own listeners. If you really think that the Democratic National Committee's behavior was responsible for Bernie Sanders losing the nomination race to Hillary Clinton, then you are frankly an idiot. The reason Hillary Clinton defeated Bernie Sanders was because she did a far better job of winning over African-American and Hispanic-American voters than he did, for all a host of reasons, one of them being that African-American voters and Hispanic-American voters within the Democratic Party tend to be far more moderate than the white liberal vote, than the white left-wing vote that on which Bernie Sanders relied. And the fact that Sanders supporters still refuse to acknowledge that is their own problem. It's not mine. It's, well, certainly not Hillary Clinton's problem. She's gone. But in terms of the 2020 candidates, they need to remember that 52% of Americans still voted against Hillary Clinton, and that there are votes to the Democrats' right that can be won over in 2020. And so long as they don't pay attention to anything that the Bernie Sanders idiots say, then they have a good chance of winning them over. But if they are not careful, if they follow this Bernie Sanders swan song and decide, well, anything Bernie Sanders says is gospel, which may have been what Elizabeth Warren fell into this week, then Donald Trump will be reelected. So what Mrs. Warren has to show is that she understands what the Democrats actually need to do to win. And if this week is any indication, then no, she hasn't shown it. This is not a surprise to me at all. And I feel for Kevin that he needed this to happen to him to recognize that Mrs. Warren is not viable in 2020 either. I am happy for the realization, but I am sad for the method of the realization. And Kevin, I'm sorry it had to happen this way.
Well, thank you. But let me just say that, by the way,
Senator Warren, feminist moment, Senator Warren, not Mrs. Warren, okay. Senator. Unless you're the New York Times, in which case she might be Mrs. Warren. Yeah, but you're not the New York Times, you're DJ.
Senator Warren actually has – this is not the reason that that I'm suddenly down on her. I've been watching for Senator Warren since the election, and frankly, I think she's been AWOL the entire time. Please tell me what her stand was when the Obamacare fight was being fought, other than voting against it. Please tell me where she stands on this new tax package. I haven't seen a word. Please tell me what she has done to protect consumer rights in this country. You know, everything has been eviscerated. What has she stood up for? Please, somebody tell me, because I missed it. I haven't seen her do one damn thing in the last
Kevin,
9 months.
I have never said this in however many years Elizabeth Warren has been in the United States Senate, but I'll say it now. I have thought of her that there is no there there. She is a stone thrower. She is a speech maker, but she is not a water carrier. She makes headlines. She doesn't make policy.
I agree. And here's the thing. I felt, you know, when in 2014 and 2015, when we were getting ready for the 2016 primaries, and people were talking about, you know, well, Hillary's certainly going to run. At this point, nobody was thinking about Bernie, but people were floating Elizabeth Warren's name. And my position then was, interesting prospect for the future, hasn't really demonstrated herself yet. She was too new in the Senate, and I felt she needed 4 more years to show us what she's made of. Well, these are her 4 years, and so far the showing is, I agree with you, Rebecca, there's no there there.
And also, if the Democrats think that Bernie Sanders is the holy grail of messaging then why the hell haven't they been following him around for the past 30 years? This guy's not a noob. Everyone has known who he was. He hasn't been a team player. He's never raised a cent for Democrats before 2016. He caucused with us, but he wasn't even a member of the party. He was just this guy who made his name on being louder and more obstreperous than everybody else. It doesn't make him wrong on policy, but you know what? He's not a team player, and the party didn't owe him a damn thing because he had never been part of the party before.
Amen. Amen.
So who are we left with? Joe Biden.
Yeah. Who are we left with? Kirsten Gillibrand, baby.
Excuse me.
Gillibrand 2020.
One actual declared candidate for president right now. He is Congressman John Delaney. And he has done a very,
John Delaney,
a very good job
of
on policy.
Maryland's like eighth
Maryland's
or no, he's Maryland's ninth.
Maryland's sixth.
Maryland's tenth.
Maryland
sixth?
Only has eight districts, Rebecca.
Maryland's sixth. I'm in number eight. I don't know what the other ones
it'll be
are.
It'll be a shame when Cory Booker beats his ass in the primary.
Until anyone else throws in the race, John Delaney is the only candidate. And full disclosure, I have already endorsed him. I support him. I think he, yes.
What? I haven't heard this. What?
Oh, stop.
Is this new?
That's very funny.
Hey, DJ did significant research into John Delaney. Like 2 months ago, he sent me an IM. Hey, Rebecca, what do you know about John Delaney?
I did.
And I wrote back, very little. He's a pretty standard Maryland progressive. His constituents seem to like him. So, DJ has really done his homework.
I have looked into him, and he is my choice for 2020. And I think he'll be the choice of many other Democrats for 2020.
Okay, so So you've got John Delaney, I've got Joe Biden. Anybody else throwing in yet?
Cory Booker.
Sidelines.
Really?
Kirsten Gillibrand.
It's gonna be,
I like it.
New
Kirsten
York
Gillibrand.
Represent,
it's
baby.
It's gonna be Booker Gillibrand.
Because that worked out so well the last time.
Hey, you know what? Junior senators from New York have a bum rap right now.
Whoa! Excuse me. What?
Clinton was a former senator from New York.
Yeah, senator from New York.
Okay.
Now, let me say this. So far, you know, we've done about a 30-minute show here. I'm not exactly sure what the time is, but this buffet has been popcorn and candy corn and a lot of hot fudge on a lot of delicious stuff. But now it's time for our vegetables. And when I mean vegetables, I mean it's time to discuss tax policy.
Oh.
DJ, would you please make us smart and healthy again?
Ave Maria.
Okay. You ask a lot of DJs.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's okay. That's okay. I will gladly shoulder this burden. See, this week, the congressional Republicans came up with a tax proposal that they called tax reform. They tried to.
Or the cut plan.
Something like that. Ah! They tried to bring back the spirit of 1986, where actual tax reform was enacted. And for those of you who are too young to remember, which was probably half the listenership right now,
you and me, DJ. We were too young to remember. Greg was too young to remember. In 1986, we were 13. Very few people were paying attention to tax policy
in their tween years.
Wow. Yeah. Kevin was 30, and I paid attention. So there.
I was paying attention to boys.
I was 14. I joined marching band for the first time. That was a big summer for me.
Well, good for you, Greg.
But the fact tells you everything you need to know about the more perfect union cast.
Boys
in 1980, in 1986, it was an actual bipartisan effort to lower income tax rates while at the same time getting rid of all sorts of loopholes and nooks and crannies in the tax code that wealthier Americans used routinely and repeatedly to avoid paying taxes. And that was half the reason that was a large part of the reason why the Democrats came on board and it became a bipartisan effort was because they recognized that in a lot of cases, yes, the tax rates were being lowered. The income tax rates were being lowered, including for wealthier Americans. But there were there was a simplification of the tax code and an elimination of tax avoidance opportunities for wealthier Americans. And so that's what brought Democrats on board. The Republicans attempted to bring back the spirit of 1986, And frankly, when I looked at their proposal, it was so diametrically opposed to what happened in 1986 that for a while I literally thought I was I had time traveled to the year 6891. This honestly takes some of this takes the tax loopholes or credits or various diversions and bifurcates them by income, which means it makes the tax system more complicated rather than less. It creates more loopholes and nooks and crannies rather than fewer. It encourages tax avoidance rather than discourages tax avoidance, which means essentially it makes it easier for wealthier Americans to hire accountants to avoid paying taxes than it did before. It does not include the standard supply side incentives that are, for those of us who are the supply side school, would be considered de rigueur in any sort of tax reform or tax reduction. It essentially is a dog's breakfast, as the British would say. It is a complete disaster of a policy. And I have to say, those of us who have listened to those of you, excuse me, because of the listenership, who have listened to us for the past two years, know very well that I am friendlier to tax cuts than maybe certainly any Democrat alive and maybe any American alive. So it takes hard work, effort, and more than a little creativity to craft a tax reduction plan that I myself would oppose. And yet the congressional Republicans pulled it off, because this will not do what supply-siders would like to see in terms of tax reform. This will not simplify the tax code. This will not remove distortions from economic behavior. This will not remove incentives for tax avoidance. It actually does the opposite on all three. It is an utter disaster. What I would like to see is Democrats come up with their own tax reform proposal. As I think one columnist in the New York Times said, tax reform isn't going to write itself. But if the Democrats simply decide to oppose this complete piece of dreck, that would at least be better than swallowing the piece of dreck, because it really is a piece of dreck.
Is tax reform like something, and help me out here, like a pressing issue that we need, such as like healthcare or immigration? Is tax reform...
I'm sorry. I will tell you that tax reform is always a pressing issue.
Especially if you're Paul Ryan and you've got a caucus to get reelected.
And I'd like to try to take a shot, Greg. I'd like to try to take a shot at answering your question.
Okay.
I don't think it's a question of, is it a pressing issue? What we have now is a pressing opportunity.
Oh.
For the last 8 years, going back to 2008, everyone has known that some kind of tax reform, tax cut, whatever you want to call it, was needed in the United States, but both parties were jockeying to be the ones that could control it. And whoever got dominant control of three branches or three, you know, two chambers of Congress and the White House, they were going to run with it. And now we've got that. This is an opportunity for one party, not the party that I would like to be, you know, holding the jockey whip, but the party that does right now is the GOP. If they miss this opportunity, experts say that it could decimate them in 2018 and cost them the White House in 2020. But greater than that, who knows when again one party will consolidate enough power to be able to do this, because clearly they don't want to do it on a bipartisan basis. So everybody agrees that the tax code has become fat, that it has become inefficient, that the rates could be constructed better. They become a hodgepodge of Band-Aids from the Bush tax cuts going back to the old rates, and then different income levels being applied. What the Republicans want to do now, although I agree with you, DJ, it is not true reform. They do have some good ideas. The problem is it's in a stew of bad ideas. And if they would just truly try to lead, truly try to legislate in a bipartisan form, they could pass 80% of what they want by giving away just 15 or 20% to rationality. And they'd have a package. And the perfect example is the estate tax. Listen, anyone who wants to make an argument that the estate tax cuts too quickly into small farms or small family businesses, fine. Then you take the tax from $5 million for individuals and $10 million to couples to $10 million and $20 million, like this plan does. Fine. We can, both sides can get on top of that. It's when you say, and let's eliminate it for the mega rich and the ultra rich. Let's eliminate the estate tax for the Trumps and the Buffetts and the Gates. That's when you can't get a bipartisan consensus on that. And it's crazy. It's crazy to do away with the estate tax. And I'm not, I know DJ, I know you disagree. I know that people will call it a double taxation. They like to call it the death tax. By the way, I know I'm on a rant here and I'm always the one saying let's not rant. I find it very interesting. I find it very interesting that conservatives, you know, are the life, the pro-life party that believes that life begins at conception, but they don't believe that life ends at death. They think you're still taxing people who are no longer around. The estate tax doesn't tax the person.
But it's double taxation.
It is not double taxation.
That's the argument they make.
It is a tax passed to a new generation of people or to the spouse, and they never had it taxed before because it was never theirs before.
No.
Okay.
The other thing about the estate tax is, hang on a second.
Let me briefly defend the double taxation argument in that. I'm going to defend that briefly and then defend Kevin's larger point, because I think his larger point is valid, though. The issue behind the double taxation is the notion that you've essentially built and bequeathed, you're attempting to bequeath your earnings over a period of time that have been taxed repeatedly year after year, endlessly. And now, simply because you have died, the tax man gets another shot at it. And there are a lot of people who think that is not necessarily fair, and I tend to think that they have a point. However, your larger point, Kevin, about the need for bipartisanship is extremely valid. When Ronald Reagan proposed tax reform in 1986, it was not a matter of, well, we in the Republican Senate will do it, and we'll see if we can just roll over the weak Democratic majority in the House of Representatives. Ronald Reagan reached out to Dan Rostenkowski, who was the Democratic chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. He reached out to Democratic leadership and he made it a genuinely bipartisan effort, because Ronald Reagan understood, in a way that unfortunately I think today's Republicans don't, that pro-market and pro-wealthy are not the same things. You know, pro-market and pro-simplification does not necessarily mean that the wealthy always end up better off. Some of them would end up worse off. And in fact, there were quite a few folks in the aftermath of the 1986 tax reform who ended up paying more because they essentially had used their wealth and power to find ways to avoid paying taxes, and now they couldn't do it anymore. It is a reflection of the devolution of American politics that neither party, and frankly, the Obama administration didn't really want to talk to Republicans, in my opinion, during their first term or their second term for that matter. But we're seeing it now in the Republican Party because they control the two elected branches of government, in where there is no real effort to even attempt to make this bipartisan, to even attempt to win over the Democratic Party and determine their interests. And that is really not the way this kind of major reform should be. And that is why, in large part, this is not actually major reform. It's complete deformed disaster, because Republicans have decided it is more important to run this down Democrats' throats than to actually get Democratic cooperation. So you end up with something that is narrow, that appears to be narrowly tailored, that is in fact a disaster, and that is bad policy.
Well, one of the things I would say about the estate tax is they look only at, they don't look at who the recipients are. Ivanka does not need an infusion of cash. Her quality of life will not be changed from inheriting daddy's gold toilet. But if I died tomorrow, and let's pretend I have a lot of money, I don't. But if I died tomorrow, I leave dependent children. Taxing the money I am leaving behind for their care until they reach the age of majority seems punitive. The money I'm leaving behind is literally for their
but
survival.
But Rebecca, we're talking about a $20 million threshold. We're talking about a $20 million threshold.
But that's what I'm saying. But that's one of the nuances that the tax code doesn't take into consideration. Who are you actually leaving this money to? Even if I had $20 million and I was leaving it to dependent children whose welfare depended on it, it would be different than me leaving it to a 35-year-old rich dude who's already, you know, made money off of my money, who has five kids and is perfectly able to support them. The difference between Eric and Barron is what I'm saying. Barron needs assistance. Eric freaking doesn't.
But that that is why it is far simpler and far more effective. Rather than to tax wealth that is transferred, it is much more effective to tax the income that comes from that wealth after it is transferred. It is simpler. It is more efficient. And it is one of the reasons why so many of us on the right, and I still consider myself on the right, have issue with the estate tax, is that it essentially completely blows up. It can completely blow up attempts at bequeathment, including, I mean, this is something I know I'm an NFL fan, so I focus on this more than anything else. What happened to the Miami Dolphins? The Miami Dolphins, and I'm a Jets fan, so I guess it really didn't bother me at the time. Or at least I was a Jet fan. I'm really intoxicated right now. But it completely messed up the Miami Dolphins for generations. It messed up the Washington Redskins for generations. Hey, for those of you who are Washington Redskins fans and who hate Dan Snyder, do you want to know why Dan Snyder
Everyone
is your
hates
owner?
Dan Snyder.
I hate Dan Snyder.
Dan Snyder is the owner of the Washington Redskins because of the estate tax. Without the estate tax, John Kent Cook could have inherited the Redskins from Jack Kent Cook without any issue. But because of the various estate tax issues, John Kent Cook needed to find outside buyers and outside supporters, outside investors, and he couldn't do it in time to stop Dan Snyder from owning the Washington Redskins. So there's your reason why we need to get rid of the estate tax, is to prevent Dan Snyder from owning NFL teams.
Stop the next Dan Snyder.
And we all know it was laces out that destroyed the Miami Dolphins.
But let's talk about some of the other substance of the GOP plan. I'm sitting here pretty much as an example of a loser in this plan. It puts me into house lock, because I would no longer be able to deduct mortgage interest if I were to upgrade my home, because I live in a high-cost area for homes. It is very
extremely
hard to find
unfair. Extremely unfair. Right. Yeah, and will hurt the housing industry.
Yeah, well, the home buyers the home builders have declared war.
Sure.
That's going to be amazing.
Should.
And then I will be losing the deduction for my state and local taxes. I pay 3.2% to my county, in addition to whatever I'm paying to my state. Now, I don't mind paying that. I like parks. I like schools. I like bridges that don't collapse under my car. But I also like being able to write that off.
Yeah, and to build on that
thought,
what about that double taxation, DJ? What about that double taxation? How come that's okay for conservatives?
Okay. The fact
it's okay for conservatives who aren't DJ, Kevin.
I know.
The fact that residents of high tax states and localities think that it is, and this is just a general reaction that I'm noticing from their elected representatives. I'm not saying that I'm not saying that Rebecca or Kevin feel that way, or the mythical Kathy, wherever the hell she is.
Yeah, who is Kathy? Yeah, Kathy.
But
get in the fray here, babe.
The fact that they think that it is perfectly acceptable for the rest of the country to essentially pay for their high local, state, and income taxes through that tax deduction is more than a little offensive. If you choose to live in a high tax state or a high tax locality, that is certainly your choice. But the idea that you can then say, oh, yeah, I choose to pay high local and state taxes, but I think I want to be able to write some of that off on the federal taxes and thus have the low tax states and communities of this country pay more to keep the federal government running. I'm sorry, I don't see that. What actually bothers me about what the Republicans have done is that they've come up with a way to essentially sort of half get rid of the state and local tax deduction. So once again, folks who are wealthy in those high-tax state and localities can still find a way to avoid the tax man, while middle-class folks in that states and localities, like Rebecca, like Kevin, get slammed with a deduction, elimination, or reduction. This should be about simplifying the tax code. This should be about making sure that people feel the full consequences of choosing to be in high-tax states and localities. That's not what we're seeing here. What we're seeing here is middle-class Americans feel that pain and feel those consequences, but wealthier Americans still have tax avoidance options and tax avoidance complexities to find a way to avoid it. So I can understand why Rebecca and Kevin might feel that way. I disagree with the way they feel that way. But at the same time, the fact that so many people in their jurisdictions can still get away with it, even if they cannot, is another reason why this is not about simplification. This is about the Republicans cobbling together a Rube Goldberg scheme, which is really a bad idea. What we should be doing is saying, you know what, if you're in the Northeast or if you're in California, yes, you're going to pay the full bore for your income taxes and your local taxes, but at the same time, the tax rates will be lowered so that whatever you lose in that deduction, you will more than make up for it in the fact that you're being taxed at a lower rate to begin with, because frankly, in the Northeast and California, you know, what we would consider high income in, say, rural Virginia is not high income up there. So the lower rate should take care of it. The lower rates are not taking care of it because the Republicans, frankly, don't know what the hell they're doing anymore.
Okay. Well, we had some other stuff that we were – no, listen. Much of it I agree with. Just the stuff that I don't agree with, I'm right and you're wrong. But and everybody's laughing here because they know that I say that with love. I don't really believe that.
Because there's no hate. We're real debate without the hate.
That's what we're all about.
After this shuts down, we're going to be sharing pictures of our kids and braiding each other's hair.
Absolutely.
That's what we do.
It's real debate with hugs from now on. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please follow us on Twitter at MPU Podcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast. And of course, share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can find out about us as well, because, hey, they need a hug too, right? We want to thank Bob Crespo for our new opening guitar riff, which comes from his single, Believe in Me, and you can find more of his stuff at our website. He's a wonderful musician and a friend of mine. And you know where I met him? Does anybody know where I met my friend Bob Crespo?
At the bar.
No.
Casablanca.
A Girl Scout troop? Come on, keep going.
Was it at a convention where you wear masks?
Was it like an Eyes Wide Shut thing?
It was at your
high school reunion, wherever the hell that was in Nassau County.
It was in Rockville Center, but no, I met him in Open Fire Politics, the Facebook group where people make friends and meet lovers and. And all that other fun stuff.
God, we suck at promotion, don't we?
So, this is a ham-hocked way of saying, if you like debate and you'd like to debate with us and Bob Crespo between shows, please come to Open Fire Politics. We're all there. We'd love to see you there, too. And if you'd like to debate about things of a sexual nature, we have a new place for you. It's called Open Fire Sex and Relationships. And we would love for you to join us there.
That's where the Eyes Wide Shut masks come in, Greg.
That's where the Eyes Wide Shut masks come in and where the talk is always hot and lively. So join us in those two places. We think you'll have fun there. We've had a lot of fun talking to you tonight. And is there anything that we want to say before we say goodbye to these good people?
Do not punch your senator, even if you live next door to him and disagree with him. We are not a senator punching promotion podcast.
Good night.